Stand by.
More than a minute.
A little more than a minute?
Stand by. Okay.
I can't see the clock tonight, Glenn.
Stand by.
Can I back out?
Give him a standby, will you?
We're just talking here when he starts the announcement, and then they just cut in on us. It's just three people sitting down and talking about some things.
Well, we're getting pretty close to it, so.
Yeah, the conversation idea is going through and then we go live.
All righty.
Yes.
Yes. I don't see ourselves on TV there yet.
Okay, get ready.
You can watch us over there on that monitor.
Assignment 6, a public interest series of the station, presents San Juan Heritage, a realistic look at the history of the great San Juan Basin and its people. Your hosts for this series of programs are Dr. Robert Delaney and Mr. Arthur Wyatt. The subject for tonight's program, the Southern Utes. Tonight's guest, Mr. Leonard Birch, Southern Ute Tribal Council. Let's join our hosts and their guest.
Of course, one big part of the heritage of the San Juan Basin is the history of the Ute Indians, the different groups that settled in here. And for a long time, we've been wanting to do a special program having to do with the Ute Indians. And we're glad to have you, Mr. Birch, here as chairman of the Southern Ute Tribe as our guest tonight, and ask some questions and talk with you about some problems and so on. We know that there were three main groups of Utes who settled in this area, the Moache and the Capote and the Weminuche. Are they still there and are they still represented, or are they pretty well merged? Can you tell one from the other, or what is the exact composition of the Southern Ute Tribe today?
Well, that the Weminuche and the Capote and the other band are still there. However, the Weminuche band are known today as the Ute Mountain Tribe, with headquarters over Toyoak.
Toyoak. Mm-hmm. I see. Well, is there any distinction? Can you tell any distinction between, let's say, Capote and Muache group?
No.
Is there any difference in language or custom or anything else?
No, we speak the same language as. Mm-hmm.
When did the Utes settle over here at Ignacio on the reservation in this area? I know one time they controlled most of the western slope of Colorado in the San Luis Valley, and they were moved around, finally divided up, and the White Rivers went north, and the other three tribes came south. And can you tell us when they settled on the reservation over here?
Well, it was treaty was made, I believe, in 1800s, establishing the reservation at to the three bands of Utes.
Mm-hmm.
This was 15 miles long. 15 miles north and south, and
right.
125 miles west,
long.
Right,
mm-hmm. East and west. Mm-hmm.
So when the Ute Mountain Utes moved over on the west side, well, the reservation was divided between the Southern Utes and the Ute Mountain now.
Oh.
And like Bob mentioned, that we speak the same language, and they have their own tribal organization as the Southern Utes.
Same way between
same.
The two.
Right.
Then Mesa Verde was carved out of this reservation, wasn't it?
That's right.
Taken out of it.
In 1906, when they set that aside
as
a national park. Well, but the Utes used to control all of the mountainous area of Colorado and even down into New Mexico. I know that a treaty. Kit Carson was in on this, and A.C. Hunt, who was governor of the territory of Colorado at the time and commissioner of Indian Affairs by the name of Taylor, in 1868 made a treaty with the Confederated Utes, whereby they had all of the mountainous area of Colorado west of the 107th meridian. In other words, practically all of the mountainous area, everything right. west of the eastern slope. But then miners began pouring into the area so much, and particularly into the San Juan region, Silverton, Ouray, Telluride, Rico, that they coveted that land, and Ouray was smart enough to know that just by sheer force of numbers, he couldn't resist them, and he and 250 others signed a treaty, the Bruneau Treaty, so-called, in 1873. It was ratified by Congress in 1874, which gave a triangular section of the San Juan Mountains away. And then I know that there were further treaties. I believe in 1881, wasn't that when the one group of Utes went up to the White River area, to Fort Duchesne.
Yeah, Fort Duchesne, Utah.
And, yes, over into Utah. And they were a bigger group than what was left in this area. Is that correct?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Because I know in figuring some things, they figure 60-20-20. And I suppose that's based upon numbers of
yes, it is.
People involved more than anything else.
Yeah, more than half of them went up there, you see.
Yeah. Well, now, I know, too, and I'd like to ask you about this. They used to have a large part of New Mexico, and at one time, the Utes went to the Tierra Amarilla Agency in New Mexico, although I'm not sure there was a boundary there at the time.
No, there wasn't.
And then there was a Los Pinos Agency up to the north, the Uncompahgre mm-hmm. Agency up to the north. And when was that agency moved to Ignacio?
Around 1877. It uh-huh. was located there at Ignacio.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a long time before the town was established then.
Yes.
Yes. When was Ignacio founded, the town?
Well, the town plats that were filed here in La Plata County was in 1909.
Yes.
And by the way, it was filed by Hans Aspis mm-hmm. as one of them, and Mr. Hall was the other, who had bought land out there and combined them mm-hmm. and filed the original plats.
And Mr. Aspis is still alive.
And he's still alive.
He lives over yes. there, yes, and I'm sure you know. Mm-hmm. Leonard, something I'm sure the people around here would like to know, if they've ever seen a map of the Southern Ute Reservation, it's a checkerboard thing. How did this come about, that all of the land isn't held in severalty, as the government calls it, or something like that?
Well, when the reservation was established, it was a one solid block at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And the Congress passed what we refer to as the Allotment Act, whereby they allotted to each family head or the Indians allotments anywhere containing maybe 160 acres to 300
yes.
acres. And this was most of the allotments were up and down the Pine River, where the good farming area are.
And the good fishing.
Right.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And most of them went out up to Piedre and up to San Juan. And after that was the Allotment Act was stopped, it was ceded back to the government, and it was open for homesteading.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm.
And as people come in and homesteaded within the reservation.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
But on these allotments, or mm-hmm. had been allotments.
No, no. This was reserved by the allottee.
Oh, I see.
And those that weren't allotted were open up for homestead.
I see.
So as a result of this checkerboard
mm-hmm.
pattern.
They didn't make any allowance for expansion then, did they? The growth of the tribe.
Another thing, since the American Indian is so much a part of the history of the West and is so much a part of a tourist attraction in any area where they happen to be, I know that the Southern Utes have a recreation project at Lake Capote. Mm-hmm. How's that coming along? What do you anticipate? I know you don't build Rome in a day or anything like that, and it's going to take time, but I know you have some plans in that direction.
Yes, we've had some studies made on the feasibility studies for development. And as for the past years, well, we had the lake, we've opened it up for fishing and campsites, and we did all right. There's a lot of tourists that stop by and takes a Southern Ute fish. And,
yes.
And they camp out there, and we are, we hope to expand the facilities out there at the lake. And it's been steady.
With motels and lodges and everything.
This is what we're hoping,
for. And yes. A museum.
Trading post.
So on. This would be a great thing. I hope it comes through more quickly than you anticipate.
But Bob, it's going to take time. You said
I know
that
it takes money too.
Right, it takes money.
Quite a bit of money.
But isn't that on the old Pargin Ranch?
That's the old Pargin Ranch. Yeah, they renamed that Lake Capote.
Yeah. Well, I understand the Pargins came to this country in 1877. They were some of the real early settlers in the San Juan Basin.
Yes, came up from the south.
Yeah.
And over Cumbers.
Come over Cumbers Pass. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Come in here.
The Pargins, Quick family, and some other family that I've forgotten.
Yeah.
And I think the Pargins are the only ones with direct descendants in the area still
That's
today.
Right.
Another thing I know people are interested in, what progress have you made in ranching and farms, in things like that? How many people gain their sustenance or their livelihood from, say, ranching entirely among the Southern Utes?
Well, I would say, prior to this, the big income in the early 50s,
yes.
All the income, the livelihood was done by farming, ranching, and that type of mm-hmm. enterprise. And we have quite a few members that still do carry on the ranching and the livestock raising. And
some of them also, you have some businesses, a few in business of different kinds or another. You mentioned this money in the early 50s. Where'd that money come from? What was this from?
Well, it was a claims case settlement whereby the Confederate Utes shared in.
Well, that was based on that land purchase, wasn't it? That was a part of one of those treaties?
No, this was the mining, I believe.
The mines, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. By the way, speaking of mines, what do you do with mineral rights? Do you have any natural gas leases on the reservation, oil leases, mining mineral rights leased out or anything like that to any group?
Yes, we've got the major oil companies operating in this area. We've issued out leases, oil and gas leases. And most of the production from these leases are natural gas.
Mm-hmm.
And we got maybe a couple of oil wells.
Mm-hmm.
And most of these gas are piped through pipelines through the Northwest and up into Colorado as far as Climax and beyond.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, this big plant out here with the airport, this side of the airport, that's where your gas goes to then, isn't it?
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And it's piped from there on out. That's a dryer plant.
If we were back in the old days, you would be chief of the Utes, and you've had some great chiefs. I think people would be very interested. Are there any descendants of... Charlie Buck, one of the last big chiefs, or Tony Buck, or any of those still living?
Yes, Tony Buck Jr., one of the sons of Tony Buck.
Of Tony Buck. He'd be a grandson of Buckskin Charlie.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he's still living.
Mm-hmm. And as far as where these, some of your great chiefs are buried, for instance, Ouray, Cervero, Ignacio, Buckskin Charlie, and so on, where are they?
Well, Bob, I don't know, but the Ouray Memorial Cemetery at Ignacio,
yes,
is named after the great chief, and he's buried there. And also Buckskin Charlie. And, of course, our last chief, Tony Buck, is mm-hmm. there.
You don't know about Severo.
Nobody knows where Severo or Ignacio.
Well, I don't.
No. You don't, anyway. Yeah, well, I say no. What do you see as tribal chairman? To what extent are the Southern Utes maintaining their culture? I'm thinking now about language, about customs, about dances, things like that. And to what extent do the young people tend to forget this?
Well, you know, it's just like everything else. They're getting away from it, the language, the culture. But we have few members that are still carrying on the traditional dances like the bear dance, sun dance.
Yes.
But the younger generation, you might say, are forgetting these, their languages.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's too bad. They shouldn't do that.
I would hope that some steps would be taken to reestablish literacy and in all of the native tongues, because I think it's so much a part of a person's culture that it's bad to break away from it. What progress, too, are there in health services and things like that? I know at one time this was a big, big problem, TB and other things. But to what extent do you feel, as a tribal chairman, there is sufficient health service or insufficient health service?
Well, right now we've got the public health clinic out there at Ignacio, and which takes care of the emergency cases, you might
mm-hmm.
say.
Mm-hmm.
And if you read somewhere that the tribe had this insurance policy, the Blue Cross and Blue Shield, for their tribal members, and they would get the medical attention here at the local hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
And since that has been discontinued, the only one that we can, the tribe can depend on now is the public health clinic there, which is, you know, a limited extent.
Yes.
And
mm-hmm.
The personnel is limited, and we are hoping that maybe we can get something done through some agencies.
Well, you had a hospital out there one time, but you closed it, didn't you?
Yeah, it was closed down quite a number of years ago, mm-hmm. which it's now the Tribal Affairs Building.
Tribal Affairs Building, yes, that mm-hmm. used to be the hospital.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, on your schools out there, at one time you had an Indian boarding school. Now your school is completely integrated, isn't it, with the Anglos and the Spanish Americans, and the Indian all go to the same schools, do they not?
That's right. Now, when the 10-year rehabilitation program was started back in 1954, this was one of the main targets that the tribal leaders were shooting for, was to get our kids, the Ute kids, integrate with the non-Indians, and they all go to the public school now.
Yeah. Well, do any of the Hickory Apaches and any of the Mountain Utes come there?
Well, the old Indian school, is still being maintained by the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and they're taking in quite a bit of the Navajos from the Navajo Reservation, that they stay there at the dormitories and go to school at Ignacio.
At Ignacio.
The public school there.
Right.
So there you have then the Navajos and the Mountain Utes and the Southern Utes and the Hickory Apaches.
Well, not
any of them.
Not the Hickory Apaches. We've got a few Ute Mountain.
A few Ute Mountain
students, yeah.
And they all go to school there in the common public school.
Right.
Well, that's a fine thing.
You they're all going to the same school, and I expect you feel this is a pretty good thing. I don't know. Do you?
Yes.
I would think so. Now, I know you've been in office for 29 days, one day less than
a month.
Than 1 month. A lot of people of this area don't know just how the tribal government is set up for four different tribes. They're all pretty much on the same scheme, but how does yours work? I know, for instance, today that you were in a meeting all day discussing many, many different things. But how are decisions arrived at? How's the police system and things like that? How do these operate?
Well, just like any other organization, like your city government here, you know, they got their councils, and there are certain things that the council have to take action on. And you mentioned about our police.
Yeah.
I think we've got one of the finest police in agencies in this area.
Well, fine.
Another thing I think many people would be interested in, there are women on your tribal council.
Oh, yes.
And they discuss things and have the same say as anybody else on the council. In other words, the old idea of the Indian woman walking behind her man and things like that is kind of disappearing a little bit, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether Mrs. Evanson or Smith or Ms. Williams or some of these would fully agree with this or not. They might claim they're still discriminated.
Well, at one time, for years ago, they had four ladies on the council and two males.
Mm-hmm.
And
they had the majority.
But, yes.
That wouldn't have been possible 50 years ago, would it?
No, I wouldn't say.
No.
Well, that's a result of education, isn't it, too?
Wouldn't have been possible.
What's your plans in the future for the higher education for your students out there, your young people? Have you scholarships and things like that to send them away to school?
Yes, this is one of our biggest goals, you might say, is to see that all of our younger Indians, Southern Ute members who graduate from high school go to a school of higher learning.
Mm-hmm.
And to do that, the Southern Ute Council have set up scholarship funds for these youngsters, not only going to college, maybe a trade school of their choosing.
Mm-hmm.
And we are hoping, and one of our tribal council members is still going to school, as you remember,
Mr. Baker. John,
yes.
Baker, yeah. Mm-hmm. He's going to Tempe, isn't he?
That's right.
Arizona State
Arizona
University,
State.
I believe.
Yeah. And, have they? Do they select any particular line of education, like agriculture or nursing for the girls, or teachers? Or are they specializing in anything like that in their higher education?
Well, we leave it up to the individual students whether he would like a certain field.
Mm-hmm.
And we try to, our department that works with the younger members are the Health, Education, Welfare Department, and they kind of counselor, you know, as mm-hmm. service
advise
counselors.
Them.
My advise experience them. From the ones I've seen in college is that they're just as diverse as you take 10 of them, mm-hmm. 10 other people, there's no set curriculum mm-hmm. or any special field that they tend to follow at all.
Are the ones who take education inclined to come back and teach in the schools?
Well, we hope so.
Mm-hmm.
That would be one reason for your putting out the scholarship mm-hmm. in the hopes
sure.
of doing that, I'm sure. And nursing the same way.
That's right.
You mentioned trade schools. What is that, mainly secretarial, or does it take in such things as welding and, oh my goodness.
Mechanics.
Mechanics, carpentry, any number of things like that?
Yes, in the field, you know, the general field of trade.
Yeah, trades. Mm-hmm.
And we also have at our, the Bureau of Indian Affairs job assistant programs that, you know, help some of these relocate the members at different cities throughout the West for learning and learning right. trade.
Mm-hmm. Is the population increasing at a fast rate?
Well, yes.
I didn't know, but I rather had the idea that it would be. I mean, this would be in keeping with the general trend. Is it going to be a problem, the land that you have and so on, before very long, or is it already a problem?
Well, it's already a problem, the way the management of the land, the way it's laying now, the checkerboard.
Mm-hmm. It's a real problem, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, now, you folks have the old Coppinger Ranch out here on Fort Lewis Hill and Fort Lewis Mesa, that cow outfit out there. Is that a part of yours?
No.
That's the Mountain Utes.
That's the Mountain Utes.
You, you have a good deal of timberland on the reservation, don't you?
Yes, over on the eastern part of the yes. reservation, what we call as the Archuleta Mesa, mm-hmm. that's where our timber.
And are you developing that yourself? Is the tribe developing it itself, or is this leased out or sold?
It's sold to the lumber companies.
Lumber companies, yes.
Stumpage basis.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Is there any resources that we haven't touched on in the reservation, the tribal resources that we haven't mentioned? We've had the oil and gas and the farming and the new recreation area. Mm-hmm. And now the timber. Are there any other resources that you think of that we haven't touched?
Any uranium or anything like that?
Well, coal. Coal is getting to be a
quite an item
in this area here that we're dealing with the big companies on that Peabody Coal Company that are interested in mining.
Would are they interested in strip mining it, or are they interested in, let's say, shaft mining, tunnel mining, and that?
Well, both strip and tunnel. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I think the companies now, though, am I right on this, say they would go in for strip mining. They wouldn't leave the land like they used to. Don't they level it back out and
smooth it up pretty well and replant
and so
it.
On now?
Yes, they go into quite a bit of conservation practice in restoring that back to the original condition.
Well, that sure helps. Well, as you know, there seems to be still quite a future here in the development of your resources, and yet some of them are pretty well developed up to now. Agriculture, for example, your land is pretty well all under irrigation now that's available for irrigation, and use the other for pasture. Your people haven't gone in for sheep, have they, much?
Oh, yes, we've got some.
I've seen some pictures and some of the reports of some fine sheep.
I knew they had
reports
the cattle.
Filed with the Department of Interior, the Commissioner of Indian Affairs.
Mm-hmm.
A regular published booklet, something like this. This isn't one of those, but mm-hmm. this is a progress report on the Utes. Very beautifully done. How about uranium in the area over by Chimney Rock and in that area of the reservation south there?
We've got some kind of a ore there, but it's not been mined at the present time.
Has it been prospected pretty well, the reservation, would you say?
Yes.
Pretty well.
Pretty well tested out.
Tested out.
Mm-hmm. Then your main resources then are the, as far as minerals are concerned, are the natural gas and the oil.
And the coal.
Coal.
Timber.
Timber as far as the natural resource is concerned. What are Is the tribe itself interested, for instance, as part of the recreation bit over there at Lake Capote? There are many ruins, I know, of the basket maker culture and the developmental poetry.
Again, our time is gone and we must interrupt. Assignment 6 has brought you San Juan Heritage, produced by this station in cooperation with the Center for Southwest Studies at Fort Lewis College. Your host for this series, Dr. Robert Delaney, head of the Center for Southwest Studies, and Mr. Arthur Wyatt, former Colorado State Representative and longtime resident of the basin. Their guest for tonight's program, Mr. Leonard Birch, Chairman of the Southern Ute Tribal Council. Be watching on December 27th at this same time for the next in this series. San Juan Heritage is directed by Jim Johnson, engineering by Leonard Wilson, camera by David Glenn. This is Jack Welch speaking and thanking you for joining us on San Juan Heritage.
Well, now, you reach in.
Oh, we're quit. We're done.